Right, here we are. Welcome along. We are doing the Still Parents podcast. It is episode number 5 of series 3. We've only got a couple left. And it's quite different tonight. I know you probably already noticed. For anyone who's watching on Facebook, I'll say straight off the bat, if you're just listening to the non-video version of this during the week, we're actually using a studio. So this is the first time for the podcast. We've all been in the same room together. And this has all been sorted out by Ryan. Evening, Ryan. How are you, sir?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
I'm good. We are in Leamington Spa at Mill Street Studio. So thank you very much to them for having us down. It's beautiful down here. How did this come about, Ryan?
Actually, Lucy, our marketing manager, got in contact with them. We knew they obviously had a studio, but also the sort of hashtag that they work on with the Make Good Grow charity and sort of movement as well. And after speaking with Rob and actually featuring on their podcast as well last week, they kindly said we could use the studio for the charity, and obviously vice versa, we're going to give them a bit of a shout out as well and what have you. So yeah, no, so, yes. Really good.
So what was the podcast that you did with the guys?
So it's a podcast, it's called Make Good Grow, and they wanted to know a little bit about the charity and the way that we started, what we do. Funny thing was, they asked me what my rider would be, and myself and Lucy had to frantically search Google to see what rider meant, because I genuinely didn't know. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I said slab of lager, a finger buffet of Indian food.
Wow. A slab and a finger. Let's stop this right now.
Yeah. It's not one of them podcasts, I promise. But and also I said a charity bucket. So when I got here, they'd got me a Tarka Dal. Right. Some samosas and a bottle of Peroni, which was quite good, apart from the fact it was 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow. So knowing, if you'd have known in hindsight that they were actually going to sort you out with what you'd have asked for.
I'd have said a diamond ring, a Rolex watch, and it was good to be on it. And obviously it's getting the message out about our podcast.
Yeah,
obviously
absolutely.
It's Still Parents podcast, but also the message of baby loss and its effects on brief parents and wider friends and family networks.
Yeah, absolutely. And also apologies for those watching live for starting just a few minutes late tonight. We were just trying to make sure everything was up and running and everything was working. And then also, just before we went live, Ryan had an idea of, oh, let's see what it looks like if we turn the lights off. So we were all in the dark and no one would have been able to see us anyway. And if you are watching, you probably have already noticed that there's an elephant in the room.
She's not really an elephant, though.
Rude.
This is our first female guest that we've had on, and there's two reasons for this. First up is our guest that we did have, unfortunately, cancelled earlier on this morning, so he's not been able to come on the show, so we'll get him on at another point. So it's Amy Jackson, wife of Ryan Jackson from the Lily May Foundation. So we thought, we were having a look at some of the stats and the figures for the podcast, and obviously it's from a male perspective, and this is, but actually there's a higher percentage of females listening to the podcast than there are guys. I think it's about 60-40%. So we thought we'd get Amy on, and obviously for anyone who's worked with the charity, done anything with the charity, then they'll know Amy and Ryan anyway. But we thought it would be good tonight to maybe delve in a little bit deeper with what happened with Ryan and Amy's story with Lily May. Obviously, as we're coming to the end of the third series, we've had some fantastic guests on. And if it wasn't for the grief that you've been through, and with it, we wouldn't be sat here doing this podcast. So I think it would be a good opportunity for people who've been with us since the start, or maybe they're just joining along now, just to maybe hear some more from you, and also get your perspective on things too. So how are you, first of all, Amy? Are you okay?
I don't know which is more nerve-wracking, coming on this or my fight in a couple of weeks.
Oh, yes, you're doing it. Yeah. Amy's also doing a boxing match.
I've got nerves about both.
This is, I've known Amy about 5 years now. This is the first time I've seen Amy nervous.
It'll be short-lived.
I am loving it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we will mention a bit about the boxing, actually, towards the end of the show tonight. Before we forget, Matt Whitehouse, our regular ever since the first episode, is back with us tonight. Evening, Matt, how are you?
I'm fine. Not bad at all, yes. Fought my way through the snow to get here. So.
Did you hear about the there's a pub, it's in the Yorkshire Dales, and I think it's the highest pub in England, and there's people been stuck in there since Friday. For the record, it's now Sunday the 28th of November. People have been stuck in there since Friday.
I can think of worse
things. It's not a bad place to get stuck, is it? Is
that, Ryan will be on his way.
Is that good for the landlord or bad? Because it's like he's got a captive audience, but like I imagine all the Nobby's Nuts are gone by now. Everyone's been having away with it.
Nobby's Nuts.
That's a
classic
show.
Now there's a lot of liver disease going around in that area as well.
How have you been, Matt? Are you well?
Everything? Not bad at all, yeah. We actually had a couple of friends over this afternoon who we've met through the Lily May Foundation in Si and Kat, and their daughter came over as well. So it was nice. It was good. It was a nice afternoon.
We've actually got Si in the studio with us. I'm not sure if you want to poke your head into one of the cameras so everyone can see you. Si was actually our guest on our very first episode. I believe it was the very first episode that we did, weren't you? Simon Philpott, who's taken some photos tonight, because obviously we're using the advantage that we're having using a studio. So here we are. In the build-up to Christmas, there's only one episode left after this, which we are going to do next Sunday, actually. I can't remember why, so Ryan's about to tell us.
It's the Lily May Foundation trustees staff Christmas party on the 12th. So we're going to do it on the 5th instead.
Okay. As we said at the start, I'd like to, between the two of you, Amy and Ryan, I'm assuming most people who listen and watch this will have met you and will know about your story and how the charity became to be and everything that happened. But if it's okay with you, could you talk us through, in the same way that we have had with the other guests that have been on, as much as you're comfortable with exactly your story?
Go on, boss.
Go on, boss.
No, I'll let you.
Because I thought we'd use as I said earlier, why was Amy's here? Because it's quite a different perspective that we can get tonight.
Yeah.
So,
I think if you start and do it from your point of view, and then I can jump in.
Put me right.
When you lie.
Amy's got her notes. Yeah.
It was the 5th of February 2010. I had come home from work. I was teaching at the time. And Amy had told me that she hadn't really felt many movements throughout the day. So we did pretty much everything that the midwives sort of tell you to do at that time. If you know, baby's a little bit quiet. So cold glass of water, put her feet up. She had been quite busy throughout the day, which is one of the reasons why she said that she really hadn't really paid much attention in regard to the fact that the movements had slowed down. And nothing happened after the cold glass of water. So we just sort of thought, well, we'll phone up the hospital. Yeah. They invited us in for a scan, which was pretty routine. Prior to that, we'd had growth scans anyway and been discharged from that. We dropped Alfie, who was 3 at the time, off at his grandparents' house and told Amy's mum and dad, we'll be back in 25 minutes, half hour, something like that. Went into the hospital, so it was probably, what was it, about six-ish, half six on the evening. Went into the labour ward, went into a side room, midwife came in with a portable scanner, put Amy on the bed. And I think that when I saw the midwife's face when she was scanning Amy, I thought something wasn't right, but didn't really think too much of it at that point. And I think, I'm not sure if Amy was oblivious or anything like that.
I was too worried about my Ugg boots.
Yeah, and I think she was scared about
it. It was snowing, and I'd left my Ugg boots somewhere.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Something ridiculous.
I think it was just
naivety
as well. Oblivious. Yeah. We were completely oblivious to what potentially was going to be told to us. The midwife then said, I need to get another scanner. This is quite an old scanner, so I'm going to take you into a side room. And when we walked into the side room, there was a consultant and a bereavement midwife. And Claire won't mind us saying it was Claire, our actual bereavement midwife, but even to this day, Claire still says she wasn't there because they knew that we'd lost Lily. I'd still question her about that, but they were doing an audit. And when we actually went in, the consultant scanned Amy, and I vaguely remember her saying something along the lines of, no, I'm not going to tell the lady just yet. And I think then we pressured her to tell us, and then she told us that there was no heartbeat and that Lily had died. At that point, we didn't know if it was a girl or a boy, so we'd asked, and they said they thought it was a girl. The scream from Amy was haunting. It was a really haunting scream. And the midwife, Claire, just, well, I don't really remember, to be honest. It was extremely surreal. Mm. We were then taken out of the room into another room where Claire spoke to us about the sort of process and what was going to happen then, and that we would have to go home and then come back in 2 days' time, which at the time just didn't seem right.
Yeah.
Did not seem right at all. It was more of a get the baby out sort of thing.
You lost your mind early on. You punched the wall on the way out. That's all I remember, is being led to another room and you punching the wall and being really angry and just asking for a C-section, because I'd had a C-section previously. You just wanted me to have a C-section, have it over and done with.
Yeah.
They said that it wasn't a good idea to have a C-section, didn't they? For future pregnancies.
Yeah. Okay.
And in hindsight, now, definitely it was the right idea.
I was about to ask, was that, because obviously the emotions at the time.
I think because it was so surreal and so quick, and you just, if I had literally gone in that night and had a section and had it whipped out and it was over and done, it would have been even more surreal than it already was. In hindsight, it was the best thing to do. But at the time, living through that kind of weekend, knowing that your baby wasn't living inside you and having to do, I went to Touchwood to buy clothes for her and loads of weird things. It was just the
During that weekend?
Yeah, because we hadn't got any clothes because we didn't know she was a girl. Right, so I wanted to go and buy a girly outfit.
But then we still brought, if I remember right, we brought boy baby grower as well, just in case they'd got it wrong.
Right.
And being in, do you remember Pumpkin Patch, the shop in Touchwood? It's like a baby shop. Being in there and having to choose an outfit when everyone around you was obviously like ecstatic and happy. And
I hadn't even considered that. Mm. That's something which people go through to go back for. And it was on the weekend. And I was about to say how was that weekend apart? So you went to Touchwood and you did that together. And if you don't mind trying to discuss or remember or even talk between yourselves about your emotions during that weekend or during those 2 days before you went back into the hospital again.
Polar opposites.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Completely different. And I think that is the first kind of clear difference between a man and a woman, is they go straight away into like the emotion sides and it hits them. Whereas I think because a lady knows what's coming, I was more prepping for giving birth and labour and was just kind of focused on, I've got to get through this bit before I can kind of start the next bit. So I was more thinking about kind of, giving birth and what I was going to need and, buying things for her. And I think you probably started emotionally almost straight away.
I felt absolutely helpless. Mm. I felt like I'd failed as a man, if I'm completely honest, because I wasn't able to protect my own child. I wasn't able to protect my wife. I wasn't able to protect my family. I wasn't able to do all that you think you're supposed to do as a male, basically. We had close friends, family who came round to Amy's mum and dad's after we'd come back from the hospital on the Friday. And at times we were actually consoling them more than they were consoling us.
Yeah. What I really remember from that night is everyone coming and kind of us being the ones that were kind of like greeting people at the door and them sobbing and us being there.
So that's quite a turnaround then, isn't it? Yeah. You were consoling.
It was weird. Probably the one main memory is looking around the room and seeing all of our family kind of absolutely sobbing and distraught and just thinking, I've caused this. It's my fault that all these people are upset. And that's kind of the main thing. I was literally not emotional
myself.
Even
though you know it's not.
I know now, but that was one of the biggest feelings in the early days, was that feeling of responsibility. And again, straight away, I think that's the difference between the emotions that men and women have to deal with.
Just jumping in there, sorry.
Yeah, go for it, Matt.
Crystal felt exactly the same, that. Yeah. She felt, for a long time that it was her fault. Her body had let her down and things like this. And there's nothing
You've
really...
You've caused all that pain to everyone else.
There's nothing really you can say to your partner at that point to kind of change their minds, because that's the difference between, you're right, between men and women, because women are, it's the same, isn't it, when you have a child, the man's life to a point don't really change. No. Let's face it, we can sleep, up until the last minute, you know. And then, like, you know, Crystal, as with both pregnancies, like, struggled sleeping towards the end. I'm like lying there, I'm not really helping because I can just chill and just relax. Whereas she's, you know, as you said, preparing. And then she get, as you said, she literally just kept blaming herself and saying, and you can't say anything, you can't say anything.
And I think
to
in hindsight, you know that. You know that guilt is one of the biggest feelings that comes with grief. But when you're feeling it, and I think it's one of the hardest emotions for other people to watch because they want you to just forget it. They're kind of like, of course it's not your fault. Of course it's not your fault. Don't feel guilty. But that doesn't erase it. Mm. You need someone to just sit with it and be like, yeah, it's quite normal to feel like this. It's normal that you feel that guilt. Whereas, yes, rationally, I knew it was nothing to do with me, but I couldn't help but feel like that.
If you don't mind me asking, obviously because you're both here, how did it affect your relationship? Maybe not immediately, but because it's been, what is it, 10, 11?
Well, it's coming up to 12 years. Yeah.
Is it? Wow.
Yeah.
So obviously it's quite a big question that, because there's different periods of time. But I'm just thinking of people who are listening to the podcast or watching the podcast, and obviously in a relationship. And because one thing that was quite interesting, what you said, was the polar opposite dynamics. Nature. Did you have that with Crystal, Matt? So, just in terms of how you both processed and was dealing with it.
Well, yeah, we did. Because I've talked. That's been my way of dealing with it. Like, I've just literally got, like, you know, I've just got everything out there from the start, you know, and I've, you know, we're talking about Facebook and we're using Facebook Live tonight. Facebook has been a huge outlet for me, huge outlet.
In what way?
Just being able to get my feelings out and never doing it for sympathy, but just it's been a way of me getting my, because if I can't talk to someone about it, I'll write it down, you know, I'll get it out and I'll do it that way. Whereas Crystal has been very, and you know, she won't mind me saying this at all. She's been very, not quiet. She's done it differently in that she's absolutely, no question, grieved every minute since we've lost her. But she's done it differently where she won't be as outgoing, if that's the right
word.
Vocal, yeah, I suppose, to use the right, that kind of word. So that's where we differed.
Okay.
Yeah, that was one of the big areas that we differed in. Is, like I said, I wanted to talk about it, whereas she, not didn't want to talk about it, but she didn't know how.
Stereotypically, that's the wrong way around though. You get most people tends to be the girl's got a lot of people to talk to and will spend time talking, whereas the man is the one that always, well, generally goes straight back to work, throws himself into work, doesn't talk, sees the mates, and it's just kind of like that quick nod and nothing is talked about. And I think that can prove harder in the long run, generally.
I think was it Nick, not Nick Kyrgios, the tennis player, the guy who had a name that sounded like him, who came, hello, Nick, if you're watching. I think it was, what you said, it was a similar thing. I'm sure it was Nick. And he just moved house and he threw himself into work. And it was that, I guess, that sweeping everything under the rug to a degree, knowing that it's still there and it has to be dealt with.
And I think coming back to your question before, in kind of terms of relationship, that can be quite a tricky thing because you tend to find that you go polar opposite. Yeah. And can't see it because you're so kind of concentrated on your own grief and what you're doing to get yourself through. You can't see it from their point of view. So that can cause kind of issues because you're focusing on yourself and you can't understand why they are doing it so differently. So him. Ryan.
So did you throw yourself into any things at work?
Ryan went straight back to work and I found that really hard because there was no way I could have gone into work. I couldn't get off the floor most days.
I was off for 6 weeks, wasn't I? Yeah, 5 and a bit weeks, 6 weeks.
I couldn't understand how he could get up, go into work, and that frustrated me because it was almost like, well, do you not care? Why are you not sad? Why are you not kind of struggling to do anything?
Did you talk about it?
No, I just got really angry like I normally do.
Amy's really good at talking, honest.
No, I'm the same as Crystal. I don't talk. But no, so it was tough because it was kind of like you could see them carrying on and it almost felt like, well, hang on a minute, why am I the one here suffering and really struggling and you're okay? So that probably caused quite a lot of turmoil.
Right.
And I think it must have come out in the end because I always remember you saying, well, you don't see me on the way to work. You don't see me having to pull over when a song comes on. You don't see me doing this because I'll do it when I'm not around you. And then I'll pull myself together for when I come back home to almost deal with you.
It was probably about a year after. No, it was probably about a year after. And I remember that because I remember being sat on the stairs. I'd had a panic attack, being sat on the stairs. And I remember Amy quite vividly just absolutely going in at me, because she had no clear understanding of how I was feeling, because we didn't talk.
Because he never said anything.
We didn't say anything.
Right
at the beginning, it actually brought us a lot closer together.
We probably talked more at the beginning, and then I think as time went on, and less people spoke to you about it, it kind of went quieter. And that's, and again, I think that's quite common. It's that kind of, it brings you together at the beginning when it's kind of raw and everyone's around you supporting you. And then when things start kind of drifting back to a bit more of normality, a lot of couples can find then, because you're grieving so differently, almost that relationship feels so natural, and it kind of pushes a bit of a...
You think as well, you've got two people from two completely separate families. It'll all be that you're married, but you've got two complete different dynamics, if you like, of how you've been brought up, how you've
deal with grief,
how you deal with grief, and to some extent, it's nobody's fault as an individual, because it is the way that you've been brought up, or not necessarily the way you've been brought up to think or anything like that, but maybe ways that you've learned yourself subconsciously or what have you. So if you've got two clashes, basically, you've got two people clashing, not meaning to clash.
Yeah, you're not deliberately antagonizing.
No, and I think because you never, even if you had two people that were exactly the same, grieving the same thing, they would not be on the same page day in, day out. You're on your own journey. So firstly, men and women grieve differently. Secondly, we were grieving. Yes, we were both grieving our daughter, but we were grieving a completely different experience and coming at it from a different way. And then thirdly, we were on our own pathway, we were on our own journey, doing our own thing. So to expect that we were kind of having highs on the same day or lows on the same day or feeling exactly the same is like expecting the impossible.
Something quite interesting that you mentioned a few moments ago about, I hadn't thought of this before either. I can't remember the exact words that you used, but it was when people were asking less. It's like a bit more time's sort of gone.
Yeah.
And it's almost as, it's not as if people have gone, okay, everything's back to normal now, but less people might be checking in, might be asking. Yeah. Is that something you notice like as a tangible thing at the time, or all of a sudden it just feels as if everyone's sort of just leaving you to it?
I think when you look at things like friendship groups, women in general tend to have that close-knit sort of, you know, BFF as they call them, or whatever it may be.
Where are you from, the 90s?
No, I was born in the 80s.
Show off, I was born in the 70s.
I know, you can tell. And but you always obviously have, I think women naturally have a closer knit relationship with their friends.
Yeah,
I believe. Are quite happy to sit and have a chat. And I always think back to the Mickey Flanagan sketch where his wife says to him, "Oh, you go in the pub, say hello to everyone for me." And at no point in that night is Mickey Flanagan ever going to say hello to the lads. "Oh, my wife said hello." They're going to be like, "No, get your pint down, because we really don't care," sort of thing. And that is very much the male mentality, is that actually, let's just get a beer down you, or, you know, do this, do that. Because we found that we were at a time where a lot of our friends didn't have children. We were the first people to have children out of our friendship groups.
Oh, you would have been were you both in your 20s?
We were in our 20s.
Yeah.
When it came down to the emotional support needed by my male group of friends, I think it'd be fair to say it was probably non-existent, because they had no idea how to relate to me with regard to losing a child. Because they had no idea of what it was like to have a child.
And which brings us back, I think, to our first ever episode, wasn't it? Was it the first or the second elephant in the room? And it was those things that you can talk about or don't mind hearing or shouldn't hear. Matt, we've spoke about this before, actually, on the podcast, because that, going back to what Ryan said then about the support from guys, and you talked about some of your struggles. If you could just give a quick recap on that. I think there was one guy, just it was either by the hospital or he just took you to the pub. Or someone that you play. And it just, I think it quite helped you at the time.
So
you had a big smile on your face as soon as I mentioned it.
Well, yeah, it was a bloke who, so it's Craig Sudlow, his name. So he's living in America now. But he played for me when I was Willenor manager. And Sudders was a fantastic bloke. But he was, what's the word? He was. I mean, ultimately, he was a fantastic bloke, but he was an individual. He really was, and he was the kind of guy who just literally, if it was on his mind, he was like, bang, right there. And I mean, you know, going off track just slightly, when I was manager at Willenor, he would literally, as soon as I got home, he would be texting me, why did we do this today? Why are you doing that? Why are you picking him? Why are you picking that? Like, and I would have to keep Sudders. I'm back with my family now. Like, we'll talk tomorrow. Right. We used to call him Sudders. And he was
a bit of a nose.
But he was because he cared. Right. You know, he cared.
And passionate.
He was passionate. Yeah. He wanted to win. And when we lost Cali, I had a lot of people get in touch and things like this. And all of a sudden there was a message just pop up on my Facebook messages. And he was talking to me about it. And then he said, I need to come and pick you up and take you somewhere. I was like, okay. And he's like, I've just got to come and get you and take you for some food. So like we got back. So we left the hospital on the Friday, got home, and he'd already organised with me. Crystal was going off to one of her best friends' houses to see their family who she'd been around with when she was younger, grew up with. And he came and picked me up and took me to his gym and took me for breakfast. Right. And there was two or three of the other lads who turned up from the football team at the same time. And I'll always remember that. You know, I always will. And I'll always remember him making the effort and taking the time. And yet it was just one of those moments that, like, well, like I said, will always stick with me. And from an individual that I didn't think, not that he'd be the last person, because you don't know how people are going to react exactly. Until you get into this moment.
It's that same personality, maybe he was like, oh, why is he phoning me about getting into the team again? But that persistent part of his nature was maybe going, actually, I need to get in touch with Matt.
And he was, literally just, as soon as he found out it had happened, So he messaged me when I was in the hospital and we were talking back and forth quite, and he messaged me straight away almost to offer his condolences and stuff. And then he just went from there, and we were talking back and forth a little bit. And then, like I said, he just, it was amazing.
Can you remember what you were talking about? Was it just chit chat? Was it banter? Were you getting in depth? Because again, just challenging those stereotypes about what the guys were talking about and the style of the conversation, especially because we have Amy here tonight too, and just getting those differences.
Well, I think again, the beauty of Sudders is he would just say it, like, right. And I think sometimes you just want someone Sudders. To say.
I think that's the hardest thing with people that are close to you, is they're too worried about what to say, whether they're going to upset you. So instead of saying anything, they just step back and don't say anything.
Yeah.
Whereas people who tend to be a bit further removed don't worry about that. So
that's what
you kind of need. You need people to just be forthcoming to talk, to ask you those questions.
Maybe that's somebody that you're not expecting to do.
Yeah,
and that's it. And I think thinking back, one of the main, it was literally just he would just ask me. I think he just asked me outright, how are you doing? Like, and he obviously he was concerned about Crystal, but he asked me how I was.
Yeah.
And like I said, just amazing. And yeah, big shout out to the boy, because like I said, he's over in America now. He met an American girl in England, and he moved out there and got married out there. And he was a big old unit. You wanted him on your side.
A big old unit.
He was. He really was. And also he was one who literally, again, helped me out as the team went on. Sometimes at that level of football, you don't know whether lads are going to turn up and play and things like this. And sometimes I'd be scrambling around for a goal. Literally, I went through a period of not having a goalkeeper, and he just would text me and say, I'll go in goal. And he's winning goal for me.
Well, he's a big old
winning
goal.
Just winning goal and just playing in goal. But like I said, it just comes out of nowhere sometimes. It does that support.
Because I'm very wary, we're trying to get people to listen to this podcast from all walks of life, and not just people who've had a lost their child and had this bereavement. It's just to know that maybe if you're a guy who's we need somebody else's version of Sudders. So who might be watching this right now or listening to this at another point of time, and you know one of your guy friends, one of your boys, one of your lads is going through this situation, just give them a call.
And that's it. I think what Amy said was right, and it goes back to what Ryan was saying about his friendship group, and it is that whole, I do think he's getting better. I do think it's starting, and things like this are starting to change it, and this is why I'll talk about it for as long as I can, because I feel like there's a duty as a male to kind of
to tell people that we have to talk, because otherwise, you know, we all know the stats, don't we, about the male suicides and things like this, and also just talking to each other about how they can support their partner going through things as well.
I don't think it's just a male issue, though. I think I've got a lot of girls that would say exactly the same, that there are a lot of people that their friends that they thought would be there or would reach out just haven't been. Yeah. And again, I think it's that reason that they just don't know what to say. So the easiest option is to step back and not say anything.
We're trying to change the whole outlook of the subject, aren't we? Mm. You know, we are.
Yeah.
And hopefully we're trying to do it in the best way possible, and it'll start to, it'll continue to change, because even after losing Callie 5 years ago, I have seen a difference in how people react to the subject now. And I think that's a good thing, you know, it is.
Well, it's important. It's the reason why the podcast started, isn't it? This, amongst others, and having these resources, you know, as you say, it's the girls having the same conversations, and but in maybe in different ways, but it is that importance to get the guys talking and also talking about the right things. Because, and you mentioned about the male suicide, because obviously this weekend marked the 10th anniversary of Gary Speed. And I was watching, was it Football Focus yesterday, and they were talking about with the changes in awareness of mental health, especially amongst men, especially in our age bracket, you know, men. I mean, I'm in my 40s, and just having that importance of, it's been a lonely couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
And it's being able to do this. We all went to the German market, or me and Ryan did. You backed out, didn't you?
Last week.
Matt wasn't allowed.
Yeah. Scared.
He wasn't allowed.
He wasn't allowed.
And just, he was grounded.
It's nice to get out and talk for a couple of hours, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It was, even though I don't remember walking home. But yeah, it was nice to be able to.
Yeah, I felt a lot better the next day than Ryan did anyway.
I bet you did as well, mate.
It was, you know when you've been out and you know when you go on a night out and you're the last one to arrive. And as soon as you get there, you go, oh, everyone's already drunk.
You were late, were you?
Was I
late? A little bit late. Dan was late. Dan was late.
Surprises me.
Yeah. Right. Well, your husband went, I've had 8 beers.
No, I didn't.
His inability to speak at 11 o'clock, he did it himself.
But, you know, it's good for the soul. You know, it's not the sort of thing you're going to be doing every single day. This is the first time I've been there in 3 years, and it was the first time that I've been hanging out with these guys, and I've not been covered in mud and piss and shit. Sorry, for anyone who's not watched this before, we don't have a weird fetish. We've been doing this event called The Wolf Run. In fact, everyone in this room's done it. Even Simon has taken the photos, and Amy got involved in the one just around the corner from here. It's a lot of fun. So, I mean, it's good. Any just connecting via, you know.
Do we use the word fun? I mean, I'm going through the lake with my ankles nearly falling off. That's not fun.
I've
never heard anyone moan so much in cold water.
Come on, man. You don't know the pain. Honestly, the pain.
I enjoyed it.
Pain.
I enjoyed it.
Graze.
Literally 100 metres in, and Matt goes, ah, my legs.
No, genuinely, the pain is ridiculous. No, honestly. The funniest bit about that was looking back when I got out. I couldn't walk, and the marshal like looked at me and just went, are you all right, number so-and-so? And I was like, nope, I'm not.
You can't drop out after 90 metres.
No, yeah. Like, it's the shortest wolf run in the world.
We are the Still Parents podcast. I'm Dan, and it is episode 5 of series 3. So it's the last one. Normally we do them every other week, but we will be doing it next Sunday for the final episode of this one. And then we'll be back in the new year with Christmas in mind then. So 28th of November, as we sat here doing this, it'll be December from Wednesday. Look at me, knowing our month's work. It's can be quite a difficult time, and this is something I know Matt would like to mention, because we spoke about it before with Baby Loss Awareness Week, wasn't it? And I know you were struggling a bit. And these pertinent dates, which again is a whole standalone episode that we did in series 1. And just dealing with things. You say it's been 5 years.
I go through phases through the year where I'll have bits and pieces and times and moments, and I think that's all about the process of the grief anyway. But I think when it gets to around this period, I do tend to just, it kind of just all of a sudden creeps up on me, and it creeps up on me in the fact that you know, it's another year that she's not with us to celebrate Christmas, and it's thinking ahead to, like, because obviously we've just moved into our new house as well, so for the first time whatever, we're having my parents round for Christmas rather than going to them for Christmas. So we're having everyone round. Crystal's sister and her niece are going to be there as well. So we'll have a full Christmas table. But then there's always that one space that, like, you know, because, and obviously with Etta being 4 now, she'd be even more, Callie would be even more excited than Etta because she'd be five, you know? So, like, it's...
It's getting to that point now where they actually play with the toy, not the wrapping paper.
Absolutely, yeah. And they start to understand, you know, the lights and the build-up and the lead-up and things like that. And then it's just, I see, as I've always seen it this time of year with the lead-up for me, is that thinking about it's always really unfair that she's at to miss all these times, and it's hard to process that sometimes. It is, and even 5 years down the line, it's hard to process. And again, the worst part for me is that however forward I move, and however we go on with this process, certain things will always happen.
And I think you get to that normality, that new normality, but there's always going to be bits that kind of swing back and whack you. Push you off your kilter almost.
And 90% of the time you live your life.
Yeah,
you do.
Yeah.
But it's that,
and they don't pop up.
It's that 10% that's always going to be there. And that's the hardest part sometimes.
Amy, right, what do you say when you're speaking to people through the Lily Mae Foundation who are pretty much exactly what Matt just described?
In terms of managing Christmas?
Yeah, because the reason why I'm asking is because obviously everyone is a different personality and a different way of processing information, and what might resonate with Matt and Crystal might not say with Simon when he was a guest on.
Yeah, I think majority do find things like Christmas, especially the first one, hard because it's all those, it's not that picture that you'd kind of dreamt of. A lot of people who have lost this year thought they would be having a completely different Christmas and had thought they'd be having a baby at home and would be doing this and that. And now they've got a completely different journey to face. So a lot of people who are facing their first Christmas without are finding it very tough right now. And then it is those, a lot of people that as they go through, Christmas might be their time that they struggle, or it might be a different part of the year. But generally, as people move through that journey of grief, it gets slightly easier to manage, or you find a new normal. So I remember, I think it was the first year, going to the cemetery on Christmas Day, and just that overwhelming feeling of this is my Christmas now forevermore. Yeah. Cemetery on Christmas Day is a thing. And that just almost like that realisation almost like whacks you off your feet. There's so many things that you can kind of just keep going and keep going, and it doesn't affect you, or it gives you a little wobble, but then you can kind of get yourself back on the straight and narrow almost. But then there's some things that literally bowl you over.
Yeah. Yeah.
For anyone who's new to the podcast, have just found us, because I know we've started getting a few people messaging and listening from overseas. There was a chap who got in touch from the US, I think, a couple of weeks ago. So just to explain a little bit about the Lily Mae Foundation, what made you, after you lost Lily Mae, and so nearly 12 years ago, you were saying?
Yeah.
What was the process in getting to where you are now and deciding that this is how you wanted to move forward and this is where you're going to be with things?
Again, I think it's quite a misperception that people have. People see us now and think, oh, well, you're doing so well, you've done all of this and blah, 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 I can't really relate to you because you've managed to do all of this. And I always say to people, you didn't see me in the early days. I was not doing anything like this in the early days. I couldn't have possibly have done anything like this. And it was a long time coming. We didn't really do anything. Yes, we got charitable status 2 years after she died, but that didn't mean we were offering any support to people kind of doing anything like we were doing now.
The charitable status that we got straight away really was just so that we could be show
Ryan's coping mechanism.
That as well, probably.
Yeah. Basically.
It's like a counselling session, this is. It was
Do you know what? I would actually like to be a fly on the wall when we're doing this podcast.
What, when we get home?
Yeah, just on fire. This is amazing.
No,
it was, though.
It was.
Tell me about when we left hospital.
It was. No, it was, because I did the typical man thing, which was trying, I'm just going to put it there. I'm just going to park it. Mm. Park it over there. I don't have to think about it.
Or he parked me at the mum's house and went off to find golf day prizes.
Because for me, I had to do something. Yeah. I couldn't just sit in a room. I couldn't sit in a...
I understand that.
We didn't want to go home. Didn't want to go out. I couldn't have cared less if that house had burnt down at that time, because it was it wasn't being used as we'd planned to have it used. And all we were doing was literally getting up in the morning and just almost surviving. It wasn't even a case of we'd got a plan of anything to do. Having to go to the funeral directors, obviously, but that was delayed because she'd gone for a post-mortem, and there was obviously a delay in that respect. Learning how to plan a funeral. Never planned a funeral before in my life, whether that be for grandparent, parents, never done one. So again, walking into a funeral directors and they say, oh, you know, what music do you want? What coffin do you want? To be quite frank, mate, I couldn't give a monkey's. Mm, it was like, it was really, we are living an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
It was getting up in the morning and just trying to survive. And fortunately, we'd got Alfie. He was our reason to keep obviously going. But also, we were very fortunate. We stayed at Amy's mum and dad's house for, what was it, 2 and a bit weeks? Two and a half weeks? Idea. Something like that.
Just because you didn't want to go back to the house?
No, but yeah, wasn't interested. Just was not interested at all. Like I say, that house could have burnt down. I really didn't care.
I think that whole process of going back to the house, I just remember the silence. I can understand why you didn't want to do that because we had nowhere else to go. We went back to the house, and what happened to us was fortunately Crystal's sister had come up and she'd said, right, I'm just going to go. And I think my parents possibly went with her, I don't know. And they cleared our house of all the stuff that was ready to go. So you had like the crib that was upstairs and there was one downstairs as well. And
they came and cleared that away.
Got rid of everything because like they didn't want us to go back to a house that was full of, and like I said, the main thing for me was the silence. It was just because it's
the opposite of what you're expecting.
Shouldn't have been
to,
quiet. And
again, comes back to that vision that you've got has literally been torn up, chucked out the window, and you're faced with a completely different picture.
It's what you're saying, the human mind isn't, it's not geared up and wired to that process, to go through that process. Why should it?
Yeah.
Why should you go through that?
Do you know, one of the worst things I think I could possibly say that I used to really, really struggle with, but probably never, ever said anything, was that you'd wake up in the morning and for the first 10-15 seconds you'd think, oh, it's a new day, and then all of a sudden boom
bang,
it just hit you, and then you were like, right, it's another day now that I've got to survive. And over time, yes, it got easier, not easier to accept in any way, shape or form, because you never accept it.
So it's like a weird new familiarity.
It's your new norm, basically. Again, not wanting to go home. It was very similar. Amy's workmate was the one that went round to our house and, you know, got whatever cards were coming through the door, flowers. I mean, we went back to the house. It was like a florist, weren't it? But there were so many flowers.
To this day.
Say that again.
I hate flowers to this day.
Yeah, it was just...
Just reminds me of death.
I tell you now, I know the day we went back home, it was the day after Lily's funeral, because we went back into our house for the day that Lily's funeral, 18th of February 2010. It snowed on that day, didn't it? It snowed when we came out the church. So I can remember those sort of dates. And then the day after a funeral, we went to Germany.
Oh, did you really?
We just had to get away, didn't we?
Got away on holiday.
We just had to get away. Yeah. I remember saying to work, actually, because I was obviously off. I'd been signed off at that point. I was signed off sick on bereavement leave. I remember saying to my boss at work, I'm going to Germany for a few days. He was sort of saying, you can't do that. You can't do that because you're supposed to be in work. And I was like, listen, mate, I'll do what the hell I like at the moment sort of thing. You know, that work is not my priority. My priority is my family and you know, my mental health, if you like.
Your
at that
family
point.
And your state of mind.
My state of mind. And we went to Germany and...
Because obviously it wasn't a holiday. What did you do?
Again, it comes back to its distraction. And I think this whole grief journey, it's almost like two bits. You've got the grief side and then you've got your distraction side. And you just swing between the two. It was almost like we threw ourselves into the distraction, hoping that would ease it for a little bit. Change of scenery, not seeing people giving you that kind of like the knowing look. And, oh, look, there's a couple that have just lost their baby.
Or the people crossing the road.
Yeah.
We went to Torquay.
Yeah, so it's common because it's just, and it does help. It doesn't make anything any easier, but it does just help to have a bit of a distraction and a bit of a change of scenery.
And we mentioned before, there's good, you know, there's good distractions and there's bad distractions, and it's also being mindful. And I think this is why it's really important at the same time to make sure, obviously, you guys are clearly just for the fact that you just banter with each other all the time, that, you know, you've got a strong relationship and you'll be there to help each other. I've met Crystal. We did the wolf run. Crystal didn't moan when we got out of the first lake, unlike Matt. You know, and again, lovely family.
I can't do anything, can I? Like, just can't make any mistake. Not one mistake.
I can tell that Matt and Crystal are close because at the golf dinner and dance that we did with the Lily May Foundation not so long back, just a few weeks, and Crystal came over to me and with your phone and went, "Why are you sending Matt love hearts?"
Yeah, she was very jealous.
Because it was at the end of a message. I was just checking if he was all right. And that was it.
Absolutely.
Why are you sending him love hearts? So I sent him two the next day just to wind her up.
Man love. Man,
that's
love.
What it is, yeah. You know what I mean? But yeah, no, I think it's unfortunately, it's one of those things, relationships with anything. But like when you go through something like this, I do genuinely believe that it either pulls you that way or it sends you the other way.
I disagree in terms of, I think you have both. And I think kind of what we were saying before, initially it kind of brings you closer because it's so, you just don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think then it can be quite common for you to kind of move apart away, as the grief kind of goes on and you're both on your own journey then. Can be really common because you're both in different places doing it differently to then struggle in a relationship before you kind of come back together almost, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, that does.
Yeah, yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
We actually haven't got much time left. We've just been given our little notice. We've only got a few minutes. So before I forget, actually, have you found this, by the way, Amy? Because our first ever female guest on the Still Parents podcast, looking at things from...
Apart from you like wasting time talking about football. Yeah, it's fine.
Well,
my whole life is wasted on football.
Why? Because obviously this is done for men to talk and to listen to each other. And obviously it's not just purely aimed at men, but we would like the guys to listen to it because this is why we're here. And I think, again, we're just to cover old ground, but we're just stressing that importance of communication in whatever capacity, serious, just lighthearted, dark humour, just silliness, whatever it is. So why do you think there's more girls than boys listening to this podcast? Girls and boys, what am I, eight? Men and women. Sorry, it's because I saw the toilet sign outside of the way.
I just think it's more common for the girl to be more involved in this kind of world. Yeah. And I do find that quite often it is either the lady that comes forward first who will then kind of pass it on to the male, or quite often we use this as a good tactic of kind of trying to get the male involved, getting the lady to listen to it whilst her husband or partner's around.
I think there's that stubbornness with a guy sort of too, and it is that thing of like, look, have a listen. And,
and again, coming back to Ryan, it's that distraction at the beginning. I don't need it. I don't need it. I don't need that. I don't kind of, why would I need to listen to that? Yeah. And then quite often when they do, they realise actually.
Exactly. And one thing that we've had pretty much that's come up in more or less every show that we've done on this is, and there's a couple of guests in particular that stand out, was just that feeling. It's a release, isn't it? Mm. Once you've spoke.
Yeah.
I think it was Ian Lawton, and he'd sat outside before he went into the first meeting, which had been aimed specifically at guys, because he'd been before with his family, but he wasn't feeling as if there was anything necessarily being spoken about, you know, how he was feeling. And he almost didn't go into it. And he came out, and obviously the grief's still there and he's still in that process of healing. But there was that moment of a little bit, just everything was a little bit brighter.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm trying to stress again, whether you're just listening to this for the first time or with all of them, that you can reach out to Ryan and to Amy. And that's kind of why I wanted to a bit more in depth with the both of you tonight, especially that you've been on, just so that people who may be feeling that they don't want to, or they're a bit apprehensive, that you guys are here to share your story and also to help. So if you'd like to get in touch, all the details, if you're listening to the podcast through whatever your provider is, all the details will be there. So you can get in touch. I think we're just about done, which is a shame because I quite like it in here. I could do my radio show in here tomorrow. That'd be nice.
I like it in here as well.
Ryan want to go home because he's going to get in trouble. Thank you very much at Mill Street Studios, Leamington Spa, for having us down here. And hopefully we'll be back. I didn't realise until we got down here that this is where Ben Foster records his... You know the cycling goalkeeper?
I do know the cycling. He's got his podcast is absolutely cracking he's great. As well. Yeah, I'd recommend that for any bloke, actually.
I'm going to download to drive home with, so I'll do that.
There we go. All right.
Can you do two things at once?
now the real Amy's coming through.
Honestly, like, just,
you need to concentrate.
Can we cut her mic?
just a reminder, we will be back next Sunday. So, what's that? The
fifth.
Thank you very much for coming on, Amy.
That's all
How's it been for you? Has it been all right?
Yeah, it's been good.
Thank you. I think it's, I found it very insightful, and also just hearing that different perspective as well, especially from, because this is the first time we've actually been able to have a direct conversation with the relationship dynamic between the two people, and I've really found that interesting. So thank you. And yeah, if anyone has any final things they would like to say.
Can I just push one thing real quick? I know it's not on the topic of this charity, but it's something else I'm doing.
Of course you can.
So a week on Monday, I'm sleeping out at the Birmingham City Ground overnight to between 8 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the morning to support the homeless. So so we're sleeping out actually at the ground
outside the Blue Stadium.
No, around the pitch, around the outside of the pitch. Yeah. Yeah. So if it rains, we're under one of the stands. But then it's. Yeah, easy. We're basically raising enough money to try and change the lives of 12 homeless people.
That's really good.
So I've got a Just Giving page, so have a look on Facebook.
Okay. Would you like to just give it, and your Facebook details, anyone else have a look?
Well, my Facebook name is Matty Kelly. So okay. if you, but the Facebook, I'll be putting the Just Giving page out again this week. So.
All right. Well, I hope that goes well. Hopefully, you won't pull out of that. No, it's brilliant. Obviously, I mean, it's cool that you're on the pitch. You should take a ball. You've got to take the ball in for a kick.
We're not allowed on the pitch. We're less around the outside of the pitch. We go on the pitch, the groundsman will...
Come on, 3 a.m, the groundsman's not going to be there with his pitchfork.
Get off my land.
He will know. He will know the next morning.
All right.
And also as well, Dan, we've got our Christmas Little Shining Light service next Sunday, which is the 5th.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is on the afternoon before... Obviously, we do the podcast. There are two services. There's one at 2 o'clock, and which is a family service, which you can bring children to. And then we're doing one at 4 o'clock as well, which is a service which, unfortunately, is not going to be with any children. So that's for adult only service. If you want more details on that, it's all over our social media pages. And yeah, we look forward to welcoming people to that very successful service that we do every year.
Okay, that's brilliant. Yeah, don't forget your masks, because that's coming back in, isn't it, in a couple of days?
Oh yeah, masks. We'll all be in lockdown again soon.
That's it.
Yeah.
So listen, once again, thank you very much for listening and for watching it, and we'll be back with the next episode and the final episode in series 3 next week. Thank you very much. Take care of yourselves. Goodbye.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.